I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia, at thecommentary.ca. I found the recent book from writer Sarah Kinnaman, The Bucket Fucket List, so useful. I had a fun time reading it. In the book, she puts together a list of 3,669 items. These are things that you could do, have done, or have no desire to do. The list is at once aspirational, as it is a collection of things that most of us have done. That's what surprised me about the book, that I had actually done a few of the things listed, even more than I thought I'd accomplished. The book began from Ms. Kinnaman's own list that she began after most of her 20s was spent immobilized by anxiety and depression, having emerged with FOMO, or the fear of missing out. These lists gave her motivation to do things she always wanted but didn't or couldn't. I'll get Sarah to tell us about the genesis of this book, as well as the things she's done and wouldn't. Sarah Kinnaman writes about food, sex, and travel for Bust, McSweeney's, Nerve, iWeekly, and the Globe and Mail. The full title of the book is The Bucket Fucket List, 3,669 Things to Do or Not, Whatever, and is published by Clarkson Potter. At Sarah Kinnaman is the Twitter handle. She joined me from here in Vancouver last month. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Sarah Kinnaman. Ms. Kinnaman, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Pretty good yourself.
I'm great, thank you.
So the thing that I was I realized as I was reading your book was there's a lot in here that I've actually done. And I guess a lot of people are telling you that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's different stuff for different people, but I mean, I did want it to be, you know, mixed amongst the crazy stuff. I did want there to be stuff that is attainable. It can't just be, like, aspirational. So it's fun to hear that. I love hearing that, yeah.
And that's the other thing that I was thinking about as I was reading it, was because there are 3,669 things here. Let's say one does get through, oh, I don't know, say 95% of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned aspirational a moment ago. What do you think, what sort of life do you think that represents?
An Instagram life, maybe. I never wrote it with the intention that someone would be able to do every single thing on there. It's more about, you know, introducing people to things that they've never heard about, you know, inspiring them to try stranger things or things they maybe wanted to do for a while and haven't, or just make people laugh and be like, yeah, there's no way, I never want to do that. So I wrote the book and I've only done 389 things in it. So, yeah, it was never about completing everything. It's just more about being entertained, inspired, maybe learning something. So, yeah.
You mentioned an Instagram life. You know, a lot of the bucolic places that are mentioned in the book are things that are places, I should say, that we'd think of going to. You know, they're all places that we see on our feeds, you know, our Instagram feed or Facebook or Twitter,
mm-hmm.
Where other people have been. But for a lot of people, just because a lot of other people have been there, that's the only reason for them to go there. So how does one discern what's really important to see, say?
Yeah, I guess it's different for everyone. I mean, I know there is a lot of sort of emphasis on Instagram life and wanting to be like other people. And I find the more I see something online, the more I think, you know, I get influenced by it. As much as I hate to be influenced by it, I do think, oh, I've seen that like a bunch of times. I really want to go there.
Yeah.
So I think it's about just knowing yourself. And for a long time when I first started keeping this list, I did end up doing a lot of things just to prove that I could do them instead of just doing them because I really wanted to. So when it came time to write the book, that's where the fuck it part came from, was like me being like, okay, like it's okay to be like not want to do something just because everyone's doing it. And, you know, we don't always have to live that A-roll life. We can, you know, be realistic and be like, hey, I just want to sit on the couch and watch Netflix. I don't want to be climbing Mount Fuji. So that's okay too. So I think there's a bit of everything in there for people.
So how would you describe how something would be on one's fuck it list? I mean, is it something that one's not interested in, something that's, say, impossible? I mean, I don't write poetry, me being poet laureate, for example, that's not in the cards.
Yeah. So it could be anything. It could be something that is definitely possible for you, like, let's say, eating durian, but you're like, no way, I don't want to do that. I can do it.
Yeah.
Or it could be, you know, like you're never going to climb, you know, Mount Fuji, or you're never going to climb Mount Everest. So it could be any of those things. It could be just something, you know, that you've heard other people have done and you're like, there's no way. For me, going to Burning Man is on my fucking list. Like, that to me is my worst nightmare. But skydiving and, like, all that kind of stuff, I'm all over it. So, yeah, different for different people, and it's just really just a personal thing. And even, like, something really stupid, you're like, oh, I'm never going to do that.
Yeah.
So totally different depending on the individual.
Now, you mentioned I guess before this list became a book, you'd kept a list yourself. Now that it's in book form, do you actually have a copy of this and are ticking off the boxes in it, say?
My original list or the book itself?
Yeah, I mean, so do you use your original list or do you use a copy of the book?
The original list is huge. It's like 16,000 things, and it's like across papers and everything. Uh-huh. So I do still have it and refer to it. But I do actually use the book. I was just flipping through it the other day to get some ideas of things I want to do when I'm in Portland. And I do check things off as I go. And that's kind of fun, which is funny because I wrote it. But at the same time, sometimes I'm surprised. I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do still use it. I love keeping lists. So this is right up my alley. But, yeah, the original list was pretty unwieldy. So I sort of whittled it down to, like, the funniest and greatest and most interesting things. So
That's the coolest part, I would think, is that you've written this book and now can use it yourself.
Of course. Yeah, that's really – I love that. And I love hearing from other people, like friends, family, what they've done, what they don't want to do, what they think is funny, when they read about something they've never heard of before and they're like, "Where is that a thing?"
Yeah.
So that really is exciting for me, too.
Yeah, it is fun to as one reads the book and come across something that they're not familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, go and Google it and find out more.
Yeah, I do encourage people to do that because there's some things in there that that people might not know about. There's one which is like a phobia. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it properly, but anatidaphobia, which is like a fear that a duck is always watching you, which is so weird. So find a cure for that.
Yeah.
I had to include it. Like, what is there? Maybe two people in the world that suffer from this.
Right.
But
yeah.
I was like, that is so random.
Yeah. Now, the illustrations are by Jamie Armstrong.
Yes, local.
So how did you work together? Were there ones that you wanted illustrated, or did they just simply do what they felt was...
Yeah, well, Jamie, he and I have been friends for a while. He's a local illustrator and has his own card company, and he just gets me. Like, from the very beginning, I approached him and asked him to put together some illustrations for my pitch to agents and publishers.
Uh-huh.
And I never really gave him any guidance. I just love his work. He just understands me on a deep level. And so I just kind of gave him a list of 200 things that I might use in my sample, and he did a bunch of stuff. It was pretty much perfect. I never had to tell him. I never had to tell him what to do, what not to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it came time, when we got our deal, there were a few that the publisher wanted illustrated, and there were like a couple, like the duck phobia I really wanted illustrated. But other than that, I just told him, do what you want. I completely trust you. He understood the vision of the book, and he is hilarious. So, yeah, we worked remotely. Like, he lived downtown. I live on the North Shore. So we never actually worked together in the same space, but he always sort of knew exactly what it was about.
Now, the pages are colored as if to suggest sections. Are they organized in any way, these things?
No, not at all. That was a decision that Penguin went with. I'm not really sure. I never really understood what that was. It kind of looks like the colors from those, like, you know, those notebooks we had in elementary school.
Right, right.
Yeah, I think it might be that, but no, they're not sections, and I can't really answer that 100% because that was something they decided to go with aesthetically. It wasn't something that I had asked for. So that's our best guess as to why they're like that, but no, they're not. They're not any. I find it funner in being random because if it was in sections, then you would kind of know what to expect.
And I just like the color of it. I mean, it's pleasing to look at.
It sort of got that nostalgic feel to it, which I kind of like as
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I was thinking about as I was reading the book was how we look at one another, and I guess a lot of people suffer from delusions of grandeur, don't they?
Of course, yeah.
And social media really does point it out to us, doesn't it?
It does, and it's such a huge part of our lives now, and I think we kind of get into that cycle where we compare ourselves to other people all the time, and I don't necessarily think it's healthy. Like, sometimes it can be inspiring and it can motivate you, but then other times it can make you sort of not appreciate what you already have or what I found going through the book when I'm having a sort of a down day and seeing all the things that I've done can perk me up, because I can be like, my life's pretty great. Like, look at all these amazing things I've done. So it can kind of work on that level for me as well, and hopefully for other people.
Yeah, the other thing, we know what's good for us, and sometimes we forget that. And having a list reminds us, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And no one else can tell you what's right for you. And, also know that the list is not the be-all, end-all. Like, something you want to do today might be something you have no interest in 6 months or 5 years from now as well. Like, it's definitely a fluid thing. You don't need to stick to goals that you set 5 years ago just because you set them. Uh-huh. I think you need to realize what works for you at the right time in your life.
When did you start putting the list together?
Probably about 10, 15 years ago. Like, it didn't start as an idea for a book. It was just more me making a list of strange things that I heard about or saw. I have a huge travel bug, so I was just, making lists of things I wanted to do in certain places. I'm kind of a fearless eater as well, so I would often make lists of foods I wanted to try. And then it kind of evolved from there. I would hear about things that I, definitely would never be able to do, and would put them down anyway, just because it was something interesting I could tell my friends about, or just, something that I might forget if I didn't make note of it. So it just kind of grew from there and became this huge master list that I could work from when I eventually did turn it into a book.
Would I be wrong to assume, Sarah, that once you started cultivating the list, that it made it, I guess it gives you a reason to get out more, I suppose, doesn't it?
It does. For me, my background, I struggled quite a bit in my 20s with anxiety and depression, and it really made me sort of pull back and be a little more insular in my life. So once I sort of came through the other side of that, I kind of felt like I was wanting to make up for lost time and all of the things that I knew I could do but I had never done. So I almost went too far in the other direction, where I was doing everything just to prove I could do it to make up for lost time. So then when it came time to write the book, the fuck it part was more about me finding that middle balance, being like, okay, I don't need to prove I can do all these things because I didn't do anything but sit on the sidelines for my 20s. But it's sort of, the pendulum's in the middle now. I can be like, okay, no, I really don't want to do that. Even though it'll be fun to check it off, I really would just be doing it for that. So it's kind of become more balanced now, whereas for a long time I was doing anything and everything just to prove that I could do it to myself.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's more balanced.
You mentioned having the travel bug, and that's another thing I was thinking about, was that doing a lot of this stuff would cost a lot. I'm sure there are people listening to this that'll whine at the prospect of having to, shell out dough.
Mm-hmm, of course.
What do you say to them? I mean, I was just thinking, getting a cupboard full of Chateau Margaux, for example. I mean, that's not something, I'd like to do that, but I mean, it's not something feasible at the moment.
No, and right above it, it does say, fill up your wine rack with $2 chuck.
Yeah, right, correct.
It's a balance. I did have, I think, an Amazon comment that said something along those lines, like, disappointing because, this is for people with a lot of money. True. I mean, but again, I never made it, didn't write it so that people could do everything on the list. And bucket lists tend to be aspirational anyway. Mm-hmm. But it's more about going through it and finding, what's right for you. Or let's say you are planning a hotel, like a vacation to, Quebec or Paris or Denmark or something, and you want ideas of what to do there. There might be something in there that you haven't thought of that's not in a traditional guidebook. So again, it's about picking and choosing, you know, and aspirational, but not in a way to make you feel bad because you can't do it, but more like, hey, that's really interesting. Or, you know, you have a buddy or someone you work with who's saying that they're going somewhere and you're like, oh, I read this thing in this book. You should totally try it. And I think it's just more about knowing what's out there.
Yeah.
And it's not I never intended it to make people feel bad because they can't do everything on there. And, you know, maybe travel isn't someone's thing anyway. So it's just more about knowing options, you know, maybe even inspiring them to become, you know, a tourist in their own town or province or state. So it doesn't have to be that. Like, not everyone's going to go to Siberia, and I get that. But it's about, you know, that exists and it is an option.
Knowing that Siberia is there, yeah.
Yeah.
there are a lot of funny places, too. I mean, you know, me being puerile for a moment, I mean, when I'd read about Dildo or Kumbum, India, for example, help but giggle at that.
Yeah, yeah, and there's two towns in Scotland called Swat. You know, maybe you're there going to look up your past or your genealogy, happens to be in the neighborhood. Well, that would be funny. Why not go there and get a picture? Yeah, and, you know, some of them are just to make you laugh. Like, I'm not entirely sure there's anything happening in Kumbum, India, that would be of interest to tourists.
Right.
But, you know, it's fun to laugh.
So I'm sitting to my office here in Vancouver at home, and it's, as you can imagine, stacks and stacks of books. And one of the things on the list is to find a cure for this word that we've seen on the Internet a lot, tsundoko.
Mm-hmm.
And that means having too many books and or piles of books that one hasn't read. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't really need a cure for that. I guess I could take fuck it on that one, right?
Of course, yeah. I also take fuck it on that one because I am surrounded by books.
Right.
And, you know, but it's just interesting to learn other cultures and their words for things. So the Japanese have that term. You know, it's the same as Marie Kondo and her whole thing about decluttering. Take it or leave it. I mean, I'm not going to. I'm happy to have books completely all around me and the possibility that there's 20 things lying on the floor that I could read if I wanted to.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to know that there's a term for that in another language as well.
Yeah, it's a lovely thing too. I think that it's something that we can borrow from that language and use as our own.
Mm-hmm, of course.
Yeah. We've heard of a FOMO, fear of missing out.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard of JOMO before, joy of missing out. How do you explain that?
The opposite. So it's more along the lines of the fuck it, you know. You see all these influencers or coworkers or friends and they're doing all these things and it's completely okay to opt out and be like, no, I don't want to do that, you know. For there was a lot of people that you know, in the Fire Festival or whatever happened. Yeah. So there's a lot of people that had some JOMO over that when they heard about it. So I think again it's about, you know, putting into perspective that AOL life that people live on social media and knowing yourself and not feeling like you have to do all those things.
Yeah.
For me, anytime I hear anyone talk about Burning Man, I have a huge joy of missing out. You know, any sort of outdoor music festival, I have huge joy of missing out. So, yeah, and I think it's just as important because there is so much focus on FOMO for so long that this balances out a bit more.
You mentioned Burning Man. It just sounds like a dreadful thing to have to put yourself through. And I remember there was a guy at work one time, and he was talking about how he was going. He was been to it. He wants to go every year that he possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to, you know, fool around a little bit, and because he kept describing the place as sick, the experience as sick.
Yeah.
And so I pretended I didn't know what sick meant. And so I go, so it's not a very nice place then? Is that, you know, you try to, you know, wear that out for about 5 minutes. So it's, you know, you realize that the guy's crazy, you know?
Yeah. I've had friends that go every year. I'm not interested in being in the desert and having to, like, truck in all my water. And I'm not a camping kind of girl. I'm not outdoorsy.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, like, the nth degree of that. And, I would want to be more, if I did go, I would want to be more of an observer, but that's not what it's about. It's a participatory experience where you're supposed to, you know, so completely wrong for me. And you know, great for other people. But yeah, and I'm definitely, that was one of my worst nightmares.
What have you learned about yourself after coming up with a list and not just the one that's 3,669 items, but mm-hmm. but the one that you have privately you mentioned is in the tens of thousands. Do you know yourself better a little bit?
I do, and I find with most things in life, things that are kind of scary, and maybe this applies to other people, I hope it does, but like the idea of something is a lot scarier than when you're in the moment doing it.
Yeah.
I find that most of us, when we're doing something, we rise to the occasion, and we're a lot more capable than we give ourselves credit for. And I find it's actually just the idea of something new or scary or a little bit risky ahead of time that is a lot scarier than actually when you're doing it. So I find that doing things that other people might find scary or that I hesitate sometimes to do gives me really a boost of confidence that helps me realize that if I can do that, I can do, you know, almost anything. I did that CN edge walk around the edge of the CN Tower outside,
uh-huh.
and honestly, my pulse didn't even go up. I was so calm. It was, and the fact that I could do that and not be even the slightest bit nervous
yeah.
gave me such a huge confidence boost. It made me realize that, like, day-to-day stuff that scares me or frustrates me is really nothing. Like, I climbed the outside of a building.
Yeah.
What is this in comparison to that? So I find that that can really be helpful as well.
You alluded to going to Portland shortly. I gather buying a stack of books at Powell's is on. You've probably done that. I've done that already.
I've already done it. Yeah, yeah. I adore Powell's. Yeah, I'm a huge bookworm. I'm looking right now at stacks of books in front of me as I talk to you.
Uh-huh.
So that's. But I will go back. I haven't seen my book in Powell's yet, and it's there.
Oh man, that's going to be the coolest thing.
Oh, yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah. What I'm doing this weekend is I'm going to go to Pulp Fiction and buy a stack of books there.
Oh, I love Pulp Fiction. Chris is my favorite bookseller.
Isn't he great? He's terrific.
He is everything you want in a bookseller. He messages me when things come in,
yeah.
when he thinks I might like them. I adore him, so have fun with that. I'm jealous.
What did he has he seen that in the book?
Yes, I told them about it,
uh-huh.
and he has the book. He was one of the first people to order it in, so hugely supportive, always gives me updates. I go in every few weeks just to chat with him
yeah.
and pick up stuff, and there was no doubt in my mind that he was going to go in there. Like, I just adore that place.
It is. It's a really special place. I mean, we're referring, there's several in the city, a couple in the
mm-hmm.
city. We're
yeah.
referring to the one on Main and Broadway, which is just... I mean, it is a special place because it's not just a bookstore.
No, it's you go in, you have great chats with him. There's other people in the store that, I've had great talks with other people shopping there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dream. It absolutely is my favorite.
Congratulations on this book. It's a book that I don't really like writing in books. And so I haven't gone actually and started ticking things off. But you know what? I'm going to do that.
Yeah, it's hard. It's a hard thing to get over.
Yeah.
I'm also like that. You feel like you're certain, and also committing to something on paper is kind
exactly.
of scary.
Yeah.
But hopefully you'll get over it and enjoy it. And, yeah.
Well, good luck to both of us in terms of getting through this, but
yeah.
congratulations to you on writing it and continued good luck with it. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you for having me.
The book is called The Bucket Fucket List, 3,669 Things to Do or Not, Whatever. It is published by Clarkson Potter. Sarah Kinnaman, join me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.